Welcome to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. This show will first be broadcast on Wednesday, September 10th, 2025, on 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. We're coming to you live from beautiful Mansfield Hollow, Connecticut. Comment below to let us know you're here and ask questions. You can email me at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, and Buzzsprout. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episode at Fran Storch ND for 30 days, and also on my YouTube channel at Radio Naturopath. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on this show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. So, as far as I'm going, well, exciting news. I am going to have a laminectomy. I got in with Dr. Lantner. I talked it over with him, and I'm scheduled for surgery on September 19th. So, Radio Naturopath, you'll see there might be some encore shows around that time, and there might not. It depends how I feel. They tell me that the recovery isn't too bad, that I'm probably going to be able to work the following week, but at a reduced schedule. Fortunately, since it's scheduled the 19th, I'm off the entire following week because I was supposed to go to Florida. I'll be able to rest as much as I need to for a whole week or more. And then the week after that, depending on how I'm feeling, I might just work virtually. But it's exciting because I'm looking forward to it, actually, because I think it's going to really change my life. Right now, I really feel like there's an imbalance in the strength of my two legs, that the stenosis is primarily affecting the left leg, particularly in the left lateral thigh, and it's creating weakness and balance issues. The pain is manageable, although the nerve discomfort in that side of my leg increases the more I use the leg. So if I walk a lot, if I stand on one leg, like while doing yoga, or if I do excessive bike riding, my limit for bike riding, mileage-wise, it's somewhere in the 20s, depending on how much hill climbing I'm going to do. This Wednesday, I'm planning to do a bike ride that on flat terrain, so I can go a little bit longer because I'm not climbing as much. But the other thing is that constant pedaling is also an issue. So I have to keep it less than 30 miles and not every time. And I'm doing a lot of real short rides, like around the 10 mile plus or minus mark, just to keep my strength up. There's nothing I'm training for because after a while, you know, today I did a hilly ride, a hill training ride. And that's the last hill training ride I'm going to do before the surgery because there's no point because I'm not training for anything. The thing to do is just to keep reasonably strong and aligned before the surgery. I'm going to have chiropractic today. This will probably be my last chiropractic appointment before the surgery. And I will have acupuncture on Friday, again, the last one before the surgery. And then I'll have to find out from them when it's okay to resume those things. I'm guessing that the acupuncture I can have as soon as I like. And if that's true, I'm going to try to get in with Nicole like as soon as I can after the surgery. As soon as they say it's fine, I'll get some acupuncture. The chiropractic, I'm sure, is going to be a lot longer. And I'll talk to Dr. Scott today about how long that might be. And of course, I will listen to them and do what they say. And then the other thing is I'm going to have to stop any supplements that can cause blood thinning. And the Dr. LaGuardia and Dr. Lantner pretty much at least a week before. And Dr. LaGuardia was pretty clear about the natokinase. Natokinase is one of the things I take to help to keep my blood thin because we were concerned because I had an elevated D-dimer after I had the COVID vaccination. And so he wants me to take that ongoing to keep my coagulation down. And so that definitely has to be stopped at least a week before the surgery. And he says, don't restart it till at least 4 days after the surgery. He also said that I can restart all my supplements 2 days after the surgery. So I'm going to pick through the supplements that can potentially cause blood thinning, the most intense ones. All of the oils are out. So fish oil and black cumin seed oil and MCT oil and evening primrose oil. I take all of those things. I'm going to stop those. Definitely going to stop my vitamin E, my annatto tocotrienols, those are going to get stopped. And then anything that's really anti-inflammatory, because you want to have a little bit of inflammation going so you can heal. So before the surgery, I'm not going to take my curcumin and quercetin are out. NAC is out. And then I have to look through and see anything else that could be anti-inflammatory. Certain things I'm going to keep taking. I'm going to take at least a little bit of magnesium. I'm going to take vitamin C, which helps with clotting. Zinc helps with wound healing. So I'm going to take those. I will, and then there are certain things that probably don't matter. Some of the antioxidants I might drop off, like the lutein, zeaxanthin, because again, those can tamp down inflammation. So I might stop those. But my motherwort tincture I'm going to keep taking because that helps my heart to function better, helps to keep my blood pressure down. Magnesium helps to keep my blood pressure down. And the other thing I should say is I had tried to raise my blood pressure medication dose and was unable to do it because it just made me sleepy and dizzy. And so I'm holding at 5 milligrams of lisinopril, making sure to drink lots of water, and then, you know, cut way back on caffeine and sugar. And it's really helped. It's gotten my blood pressure. I'm not down to absolute normal, but it's much better for me. Like I'm getting, you know, systolics in the 140s and 130s, which is better for me. And once in a while, it goes down to the 120s. And then the diastolics are in the 80s and 90s, which again, that's good for me. And for surgery, you just want to be below 180 over 110. And so if I show up there and I'm like 150 over 90, they'll still work on me. But I'm going to try to make it lower than that. And, you know, absolutely no caffeine, no sugar for at least a week before the surgery. And right now I'm not having zero, but I'm having much less than I was. Like I'm not drinking coffee every day. I'm not even drinking caffeinated beverages every day. I did go on a bike ride this weekend to a favorite location, and I got their peanut butter bar, and I hadn't had that much sugar in a long time, and it really hit me hard. I was like, whoa, I'm not used to eating sugar. The other thing I did was the farmer's market this weekend. I got there late because I decided after my bike ride, before I went to the farmer's market, it was time to clean the bathroom. So I cleaned the bath. That's what happened. I cleaned the bathroom, and then I didn't leave for the farmer's market till a little after 4. The farmer's market closes at 5. And when I got there, there was one vendor still there packing up. And the reason they were packing up is because on Saturday we had the skies opened up. We were very fortunate that we didn't get the worst of it. Like, I don't know if anybody actually got any tornadoes. We didn't get any of that, but we did get the sky opening up, and the skies looked very dark and foreboding. And when I got there, it was a dark and foreboding sky, and there was no farmer's market. So I went back to the office, did some charts, and then waited for Ron, who had gone to the meet and greet for KK Arnold at UConn. And then we went to the farmer's market, and that was fine. So anyway, missed the farmer's market, got to go to the co-op, and I recommend that. I had a little bit of sugar and a little bit of caffeine this weekend, but my blood pressure has still been holding at a decent level. And I will. So the other thing is, because I missed the farmer's market, I missed Michelle, and Michelle makes these wonderful blueberry oat bars. And she puts the ingredients of the blueberry oat bars on the side of her packages. So when I make a streusel for my apple crumb, I usually put in gluten-free flour and oats and evaporated cane juice and cinnamon and maple syrup and butter. And I decided I'm not going to do that. I'm going to mimic what Michelle does. And she, her streusel, all it is a little bit of maple syrup. I don't know that she uses cinnamon, but I did. Oats and oat flour and chia seeds and coconut oil. And that's it. So I did that. And I got a bag of frozen organic berries and put the streusel over the frozen organic berries and baked it. And boy, that came out great. It took maybe 5 or 10 minutes to put the thing together. It took longer to bake it. It was so easy. I really recommend it. And the only sweetener I had in it was a little bit of maple syrup in the streusel, plus cinnamon, which makes it taste sweet anyway. I really recommend it because it's like, it makes you feel like you're having dessert, and yet it's really healthy and it's really high in fiber. So I made that, and that's great. So that's a great dessert because it has a lot of potassium and it has a lot of antioxidants and has fiber. And yet you feel like you're eating dessert. So I have it after dinner. So I feel like I'm having dessert and it's good. You should try it. So that's what's going on with me. I'm looking forward to this surgery. I'll have another radio naturopath made before I do the surgery. And then it will be after I have the surgery, it'll be Rosh Hashanah that week too. So happy 5786. It's coming up. Let's hope 5786 is a good one. I hope so, right? Anyway. Yeah. So that's what's going on with me. Let's hear a quick update of Ron. How are you feeling?
Oh, I'm good.
Yeah.
I'm getting better.
Yes.
Yeah, because
this week, what we had been doing is the last time we did our shows together, we had Ron lie on the futon while he talked to me because he couldn't sit up for a long time because he would get real sore. And and the last time we made a show together was 2 weeks ago because I took off Labor Day weekend.
Yeah.
And I asked him today, do you want to lie on the futon while I make the show sitting at the desk? He said, no. So you okay?
Yeah, I'm good.
And he's good.
I'm good.
So you're getting less sore.
I got a stiff neck, but other than that, I'm fine.
Yeah. And you're stretching your neck?
All the time.
And you're doing PT exercises?
Every morning.
And that's great.
Yeah.
And do you have an idea of when you're going to be cleared to ride a bicycle on the road?
I do not have an idea of when I will be cleared.
When is your next doctor appointment?
Well, I got to look it up because I can't remember because I don't keep those things in the front of my head. They're in the back of my head somewhere.
But it's in your calendar.
It's in my calendar.
That's
right.
Good.
I have to look it up. Right.
And when you put it in your calendar, do you put a notification a week or a couple of days before? Okay. So it pops up and
if I didn't do that, I wouldn't be able to get anywhere.
Right. Yeah, I know.
Right.
I mean, I always put it. I will often put, if it's something important, I put a notification in a week before and
then
a few days before.
Yeah. I have like an incredibly busy schedule right now. I got a lot of things going on.
You do.
And so it's,
it's almost cyclocross.
Yeah, it's a month away. I just sent out an email to 780 riders, previous riders, that, let's know that it's coming up. It's coming up. It's next month. It's the 11th of October. So,
And I'll be post-surgical.
What's that?
I'll be post-surgical. I hope I'm up and about by then.
Right.
That's about the 19th. That's about 3 or 4 weeks afterward. So
yeah, you're gonna be fine.
I hope you're right. It's 3 or 4 weeks later. So let's hope. I hope I'm fine the week afterward. I hope I'm fine a few days later afterwards. Because it is minimally invasive surgery. And the whole thing about minimally invasive surgery is when they go in with little tubes and they skirt around your muscles and they try not to cut muscles. And they just get into exactly where they need to get. So because they're not cutting muscles, the recovery is a lot better. Ron's recovery was so tough because they had to cut muscle. And for me, I don't think they're going to need to do that. They're going to they take these tubes, they skirt around the muscles, and they get into the spinal canal, and they have, amazing scopes that they can see inside, and then they clean up the mess, and they do their Roto-Rooter thing, and off you go. And the procedure is not very long. I will be under for an hour, maybe an hour and change. And I'm not even going to the hospital. I'm going to a surgical center. And Ron will take me and then he will bring me home. And hopefully I will not need to take opioids. I'm figuring that because when I had the horrible femoral neuralgia, I refused to take opioids. And I got through that. I will probably get through this. But we'll see. I mean, I'm going to, if I feel like I need the muscle relaxants, I'll definitely take acetaminophen. And there's another substance I will also consume and that I'm okay with consuming, and we'll make sure we're up on that. And then we'll see. And I'll be able to take my magnesium and curcumin after a couple days and we'll get back to normal. And then I'm looking forward to not having this numbness in my leg and getting my left leg strong, because I notice that when I'm pedaling, my left leg is weak. It's like my right leg is carrying the brunt. It's doing most of the pedaling. I mean, my left leg's still pedaling, but it's uneven, and I'm looking forward to that changing. So, all right, so that's what's going on. So I wanted to talk about, today the first thing I wanted to talk about was I have patients who come in who have really, they're really hypermobile, and there's a condition of hypermobility called Ehlers-Danlos syndrome, and people can take a long time to get it diagnosed. So, so I wanted to talk a little bit about Ehlers-Danlos syndrome. So Ehlers-Danlos syndrome is not one syndrome. It's a series of syndromes. It's a group of inherited conditions that cause collagen to function abnormally, and it can affect connective tissue supporting the skin, joints, blood vessels, and organs. So if you have Ehlers-Danlos, you can experience increased joint mobility. You can have stretchy, fragile skin that's prone to even breaking. And each case is different, and there's no singular cure for the condition. There are 13 defined types of Ehlers-Danlos, which I didn't realize. And they have different symptoms and health outcomes. So there's the hypermobile kind, there's the classic kind, there's the classic-like kind, there's cardiac valvular, which affects your heart, obviously, vascular, your blood vessels, so you're going to get a lot of, lax blood vessels and dysfunction that way, arthrocalasia, which is in your actual joints, dermatospiraxis, which is in your skin, kyphoscoliotic, so you're going to primarily have stuff going on in your spine, brittle cornea, which is going to affect your vision, spondylodysplastic, which is another, like the kyphoscoliotic, that's going to affect your spine, musculocontractural, so you're going to have a lot of muscle cramping, myopathic, where you have some muscular degeneration, and then periodontal, you can get where you're going to have problems with your gums, because there's a lot of connective tissue in your gums. So the symptoms of Ehlers-Danlos, they're going to vary on depending on what type you have, and the severity will also be different between people experiencing the same type of Ehlers-Danlos, and some symptoms are more common across cases than others. One of the most common, when somebody comes in and says they're really hypermobile, I will often ask them, have you been diagnosed with Ehlers-Danlos syndrome? And some of them say, yes, I have, and some of them say, I have not, but I'm wondering if I have it, and I just haven't been diagnosed. And so hypermobility is when there's a greater range of motion in a joint than usual. It can affect collagen function in tendons and cartilage in your joints, which can lead to hypermobility. It can affect all the joints in the body. When case is mild, the person may be able to move joints in a greater range of movement than normal and may experience light pain during activities. When the cases are more severe, there may be a greater risk of dislocations and instability. Joint looseness can affect muscle and nerve development in young children. Elastic skin. So a lack of collagen in the skin can lead people with Ehlers-Danlos to have stretchy, almost elastic skin. And skin elasticity affects all forms of Ehlers-Danlos except for the vascular Ehlers-Danlos. Classic Ehlers-Danlos and dermatospiraxis, EDS, typically affect the skin the most. And if you have dermatospiraxis, you may find that your skin doesn't bounce back as it should, and you may experience loose skin or skin folds. Fragile skin. When you have Ehlers-Danlos, you may also find that your skin is generally fragile. You might be more prone to cuts, bruises, wounds may heal slowly, and with the skin elasticity, this is because of collagen deficiencies in the skin. People with classic Ehlers-Danlos may experience wounds that open with little bleeding and leave visible scars that widen over time. Some people refer to these as cigarette paper scars. Another symptom of classic Ehlers-Danlos includes a skin that bruises easily, redundant skin folds on the eyes, muscle pain, muscle fatigue, benign growths on pressure areas like elbows and knees, and heart valve problems. So when you have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, that accounts for about 80 to 90% of diagnosed cases. The primary symptom is loose or weak joints. If you have hypermobile Ehlers-Danlos, you may also experience loose joints, easy bruising, muscle pain and fatigue, chronic degenerative joint disease, premature osteoarthritis because, you know, the joints are not being held together properly by the muscles and tendons. So your structures can rub together and cause degeneration of your cartilage, chronic pain and heart valve problems. When you have vascular Ehlers-Danlos, it primarily affects the cardiovascular system. and it can be a severe health condition. Your blood vessels can be fragile, skin is thin, skin can be transparent, your lips can be thin, you can have sunken cheeks, your lungs can collapse, and you can have heart valve problems. It affects 1 in 5,000 people worldwide and about 1 in 2,500 to 5,000 births. A person will generally inherit the condition from their parents, so there's a gene involved. In rare cases, a person may develop Ehlers-Danlos because of spontaneous mutations in genes involved in collagen function. The testing that doctors use can include genetic testing, skin biopsies, echocardiograms, and mobility assessment. To determine the genetic origin, a doctor may take a blood sample and test for mutations in certain genes, then use a skin biopsy to check for abnormalities in collagen function. That can involve removing a small skin sample and checking it under a microscope. An echocardiogram uses sound waves to create moving images of the heart and show the doctor if there are any abnormalities present. The treatment of it will vary on a case-by-case basis. As a result, there's typically no singular treatment for these conditions, and your Ehlers-Danlos plan will depend on your symptoms. Treatment will revolve around minimizing pain, reducing the risk of serious complications, and assisting day-to-day life. In most cases, a person with Ehlers-Danlos will undergo some of the following: physical therapy to rehabilitate joints and muscles, surgery to repair damaged joints, and drugs to minimize pain. Additional treatment options may be available depending on the amount of pain you're experiencing or additional symptoms. So it's a genetic condition and you can't prevent it. However, if you have it, you may be able to prevent further complications and improve quality of life. So you may have to do things like avoid contact sports, avoid lifting weights, use sunscreen to protect your skin, avoid harsh soaps that may over-dry the skin or cause allergic reactions, use assistive devices to minimize pressure on your joints. And if a child has Ehlers-Danlos, you have to do stuff like that like we just mentioned. And make sure you wear, if your child is doing a sport that where they might be able to fall, like riding a bicycle, you might want to have them wear pads. Or when they're learning to walk. So Ehlers-Danlos complications, you might have chronic joint pain, dislocation, early onset of arthritis, wounds may heal slowly, leading to prominent scarring, surgical wounds that have a hard time healing. The patient outlook varies between the types of Ehlers-Danlos. People with many forms of Ehlers-Danlos, like the classic and hypermobile, may see no significant reduction in lifespan. The conditions may affect day-to-day activities, but don't increase the risk of premature death. However, vascular and kyphoscoliosis do carry a reduced life expectancy because of the impact on the cardiovascular system. The median life expectancy of people with vascular EDS is only 48 years. If you suspect you have Ehlers-Danlos based on symptoms you're experiencing, it's important to visit your doctor. They'll diagnose you with a few tests or by ruling out similar conditions, and your doctor will work with you to help you with a treatment plan. So if somebody comes into me with Ehlers-Danlos, of course, as they said, it's different for every person. Every person who comes in varies in what their symptoms are. So like in anything with naturopathic medicine, you're going to treat the whole person. So you're going to treat who you see. So whatever they have going on, you're going to treat that. So you would do a full workup on them. If somebody has Ehlers-Danlos, I'm going to check them for tick-borne illness. Make sure they don't have that on board. It's so easy to get tick-borne illness living in this neck of the woods, so to speak. And I'm also going to check them for autoimmune diseases because autoimmunity and Ehlers-Danlos, one doesn't cause the other, but if they coexist, if you have an autoimmune condition, that can make the Ehlers-Danlos worse. And so if you have Ehlers-Danlos, if you have any kind of chronic ongoing joint pain and body aches, I'm going to do a panel on you to see if you have any autoimmune antibodies. And I check everybody for thyroid antibodies. If I'm able to, if they allow me to and insurance allows me to, I check them for thyroid antibodies. So I'm going to check you to see if you have Hashimoto's or Graves' disease. So if you have that going on, we're going to treat that too. So if you have any kind of ongoing inflammation, we're going to help you with your ongoing inflammation. So how do you treat ongoing inflammation naturopathically? Well, you eat a really good diet. You eat your fruits and vegetables, clean protein. Did I talk about smash fish on this show yet?
I don't know.
I don't think so.
Is that the band Smash Mouth?
Smash Mouth. If you have a Smash Mouth, that may mean that you're eating Smash Fish. I have to shout out to Susan Weed because I've been reading. Susan Weed is a famous herbalist who lives in upstate, not too far upstate New York. She lives in Saugerties, which is next to Woodstock. Anyway, she was talking about nootropics. Nootropics. I don't know if that's how you say it. Nootropics or nootropics. Anyway, she's talking about nootropic herbs. Herbs that help you to maintain your cognition into old age. And she was also talking about habits that help you to maintain cognition into old age. And one of the things, I should probably talk about that, but we're not going to talk about that now. But anyway, she said, eat Smash Fish. So Smash Fish, I'm like, what the heck is Smash Fish? It's a terrific acronym for the best kinds of fish to eat. And the following fish, what's good about them is that they are high, they're extra high in omega-3 fatty acids, and they are low in mercury. So it's an acronym. So here are the Smash Fish. They are salmon, mackerel, anchovies, sardines, and herring. So not everybody likes all of those, but I think I like most of them. The only one I'm not crazy about is mackerel. And, you know, you can get smoked mackerel and you can get mackerel in cans. And we don't generally, like, buy mackerel and you know, broil it or anything. So I'm not a big mackerel fan. But salmon I'm a fan of. We're trying to figure out if I'm okay with salmon because I had some issues with some of the salmon that Ron bought. But I seem to do okay with smoked salmon from the store. And we're going to have to retry. I'm just going to have to find a really good salmon and we'll try it again and see if I'm okay with it. Because I seem to do okay with the canned salmon. So, and you can get these things in cans. It's okay. So salmon you can get in cans. Mackerel you can get in cans. Anchovies is usually in a jar. And I love anchovies. The issue with anchovies is if you have salt-sensitive hypertension. I don't think my hypertension is particularly salt-sensitive. It's more caffeine and sugar sensitive than salt sensitive. It's inflammation. It's also anxiety sensitive. So if I can keep calm and keep my sugar and caffeine down, my blood pressure is better. And I just watch my salt. I don't eat a ton of it, but I love anchovies. I love to not, and anchovies are really, you love anchovies too, don't you?
Yeah.
He hates stinky fish.
Ugh. Gross.
Well, I like stinky fish because I'm Jewish and, you know, it was a big thing to get smoked fish.
You were brought up on it. You were educated with it.
With smoked fish, yes.
You were tortured with it when you grew up.
I wasn't tortured. I liked it. I love it. It's so awful. Smoked salmon is awesome and I like anchovies. Anchovies you're not necessarily given anchovies for Jewish cooking. You're given smoked salmon and whitefish and carp. And those are the big smoked fish that you
smoked
get.
Smoked salmon is fine, yeah. but anchovies, there's something anchovies, wrong with them.
Not everybody likes anchovies. Anchovies are classically in Mediterranean cooking. So in Italy and Greece and anywhere in the Mediterranean, people eat they eat anchovies.
Yeah, there's something just not quite right about them. They're kind of like Brussels sprouts.
But so I really like them. I have developed a taste for them, so I really enjoy them. So they go in my salad sometimes when I remember. And so I do anchovy, and I try to spare him because, you know, they're stinky. But he doesn't mind too much, I don't think, when I eat them. So that's, the A is anchovies. The second S is sardines. Sardines, I love to eat sardines, but I don't eat them all the time. And I'm afraid to take them to work because they really do stink. And I'm afraid if I open my lunch in my office, they're going to smell so bad that people are going to gag on them because a lot of people don't like fish at all. So I wouldn't eat sardines at work, but I would eat them here and I would eat them if he was traveling. And then herring, I get herring and wine sauce and I do put them in my lunch. And so I enjoy herring. Usually you're getting marinated herring and cream sauce or wine sauce. And I'm finding, you know, one of the things I did to get my blood pressure down so I would pass my my physical and also, you know, so that my blood pressure would be low enough when I had when came surgery day was to stop eating gluten and dairy. And I think I'm worse with dairy than I am with gluten. Because I haven't been having any dairy at all, except for butter. Butter I can tolerate, but I have been having no cheese at all. My digestive system works so much better when I just completely avoid dairy. I'm probably not going to completely avoid dairy forever, I probably try some really good quality cheese once in a while. But I haven't been, I'm not going to eat it before surgery because my digestion just works so much better without it. But I do eat the herring. Herring I enjoy, and I get the herring and wine sauce, and I put that a few pieces in my lunch along with some other things. So the lunch, I will have a little bit of pickled beet. I have seaweed salad. I have, I've been having chickpeas in curry sauce, and a little herring and a little either salmon or tuna. So I'm probably going to try more salmon than tuna because, of course, tuna is not a smash fish because of the mercury concern. But I get, if I do eat tuna, I try to get the smart tuna that is the lowest in mercury. Of course, you're going to have less mercury if you eat herring and if you eat sardines and if you eat salmon. So I'm going to see how I do with the canned salmon. So eat, that's how you eat an anti-inflammatory diet. You eat your smash fish, you eat your fruits and vegetables, you eat legumes, you eat nuts and seeds and their oils and their butters. You eat avocados, monounsaturated fats like olives and olive oil. And you stay mostly away from refined starch and sugar and a lot of alcohol. So the cleaner you eat, the less inflammation you're going to have. So if you already have hypermobile joints, you don't want them to be inflamed. And you remember, you're at greater risk for having osteoarthritis if you have Ehlers-Danlos syndrome because your muscles and ligaments don't hold the joints together as well. So you're going to get some rubbing and you're going to get some cartilage degeneration. The other thing I do with people with Ehlers-Danlos is I encourage them to take collagen. So, and we try to get them to take the kind of collagen that's going to help joints, which is generally types 1 and 3. And if they have a skin, and you probably want to get the kind that's good for skin as well. So we do collagen peptides. You can get different collagen products that have, some of them have just collagen peptides. Some of them have collagen with flavococcids in it to help you reduce inflammation. I have a collagen that I can get that has an extract of Chinese skullcap in it, which is anti-inflammatory. I have another collagen that I get that has ceramides in it, peach ceramides, and they flavor it with peach and it tastes really good. So, and that one, that particular collagen also has, it has the peach ceramides and it has NAD. It has some NAD in it. Nicotinamide riboside, which is a great anti-aging, anti-inflammatory B vitamin. So I have that one as well. And so your different collagens might have different stuff in them depending on what your needs are. Plain old collagen peptides, you don't want it to be plain old collagen peptides, so it's broken down, so it's easier to absorb, is a good idea. So if you have trouble making collagen, at least if you eat some, maybe it'll get incorporated into your tissues a little bit better. So that's another thing I would recommend. And it all, again, it depends on the person. If they have pain, I'm going to be recommending magnesium for them to take. Some patients with Ehlers-Danlos have issues with getting migraines because they have their blood vessels are affected. So the magnesium can be helpful for that. So things that strengthen blood vessels can be helpful. Things like diosmin, which is a bioflavonoid that strengthens blood vessels, as well as rutin and hesperidin, other bioflavonoids. And then other anti-inflammatory things, like we said to eat the smash fish, but, and you know, when you get fish oil, everybody's like, oh, I'm afraid to take fish oil. It has mercury in it. No, it doesn't. Because guess what fish oil is made of?
Fish.
Smash fish.
Smash fish.
Yes. Right. Fish oil is usually made of sardines, anchovies, and mackerel. And or mackerel. That's what it's usually made of. It's made from smash fish. So if you get a good brand of fish, that's why it's really important to get a good brand of fish oil. Make sure when you get your fish oil, you look at the container and make sure that it says it's been tested for things like mold and heavy metals and stuff. And that's the only kind of fish oil that I get. I get stuff that's definitely been tested and made from smash fish. So, and one of the amazing things is, when I have the flare of horrible femoral neuralgia, the pain is really bad. Right now, my pain is minimal. And, you know, Dr. Lantner warned me that you're still going to have back pain after this. And I'm like, well, you know what? My back pain is very manageable right now. I'm not actually worried about the back pain. It's the leg. My back, I don't have nerve pain in my back. The nerve pain is in my leg. And I want to get the structures off of the femoral nerve so I don't have this weakness and numbness in my leg. And you know, Dr. LaGuardia also mentioned that you want to get this done because you don't want to have permanent nerve damage. And I'm a little nervous about that because I've been dealing with this for a couple of years. So a lot, but my understanding is when you get the surgery, the nerve pain, because your nerve pain got a lot better. I mean, your nerve function got a lot better after you had your surgery.
Yeah.
And you're older than me, and you had this going on for a couple of years. So we're going to hope that it gets better. Anyway, so if you have Ehlers-Danlos as well, so you're going to eat your collagen. You can eat bone broth too. If you need a protein shake, I'd recommend the bone broth protein shake. And you can also make bone broth or buy bone broth. And you can eat bone broth. You know, you can drink bone broth as a regular thing. You can season it how you like, especially with anti-inflammatory herbs like turmeric and ginger and stuff like that. And by the way, eat turmeric and ginger in your food and rosemary, because these are all great anti-inflammatory herbs. And if you have an autoimmune condition along with your Ehlers-Danlos, we're going to have you eat mushrooms and perhaps take some as well. You know, great things. So great mushrooms that are immune modulating would be things like cordyceps and reishi. We have a great local mushroom grower who makes a cordyceps reishi tincture, which is great. And we'll have you eat them as well, you know, and you can get really good quality mushrooms from your favorite health food store or from your favorite grower. We have Collingswood Farms near us, and they are mushroom experts. They haven't made jerky in a while. I'm waiting for them to make the mushroom jerky again because it is so good. Maybe they'll make it in the winter, because they always had it in the winter and they haven't had it this time of year, and it may be because they do a lot of their growing this time of year. So shout out to Bill, who's listening to the show. Hi, Bill. All right. And so, yeah, so other things I'm going to be helping people with, if their corneas are brittle or if they have issues with their eyes, we're going to have them, we're going to have them take things like lutein zeaxanthin, which are good antioxidants for the eyes, and eat things like blueberries and bilberry. Bilberry is harder to find, you know, to eat. Bilberry and, you know, huckleberry and stuff like that. You can get it in pills, and it tends to be expensive, which is why I'm like, just eat blueberries. You can get frozen organic blueberries for not too much money and make that delicious, fruit compote that I talked about, the baked fruit crumble with the nice topping. You can do stuff like that, and that's an easy way to get blueberries in, and you feel like you're eating dessert, so you might be more inclined to eat it. I also have berries on, because my breakfast is usually either yogurt or overnight oats, and it's non-dairy yogurt, and bunch of berries goes on top of that, so I'm getting my berries in. And if it's a busier day, a half a banana goes on there too. Delicious. So, how I'm going to help the person with Ehlers-Danlos, I'm going to look at the person and see what's going on with them and treat them for what they actually have going on. If they have digestive issues, it depends what they have. If they have heartburn, they're going to get deglycyrrhizinated licorice. They'll get aloe, slippery elm, marshmallow root. If they have urinary issues, some of those same herbs, including the marshmallow root, maybe corn silk. If they have spinal conditions, I'm going to suggest they go get acupuncture and possibly gentle chiropractic. And then if they can do gentle stretching and strengthening exercises, that because physical therapy is recommended, which means that even if you have a hard time making collagen, you'll still encourage yourself to make some of it if you do some PT exercises. So core exercises are going to be helpful for most people. That's going to be things as gentle as pelvic tucks and, moving bridges, and things that are a little harder like planks. You have to see if the person can tolerate doing a full plank on the front and also on the side. And if they can't tolerate those, there are ways to modify those. So you can do a knee down plank both on the front and on your side, And because you're not completely holding your body up, weight up when you're doing your knees down, what you do, like an isometric contraction while you're doing the plank, and of course breathe through it. But like when I'm injured and I can't do a full plank, I'll do knee down planks on my front, and I'll do one knee down on my side as well. And you just, you know, hold a contraction as though you're holding your body up. And there was a time when I was injured, I don't know if it was a knee or for my arms, where I couldn't support myself on my arms. So maybe when my arm was broken, I would do planks on the wall, and I'll get people to do that, to do planks on the wall. And that way they don't have to get all the way down on the floor, and you just put your elbows against the wall and do that isometric contraction. And you can do it on the side too. You put your elbow to the side up on the wall, or your forearm on the wall, and you hold that position in a slant. And that's another thing that you can do. So there's lots of PT exercises you can do to get yourself stronger. When you have stronger muscles and tendons, you're going to have, you're going to be less likely to have osteoarthritis, because the joints will hold together better. And then you also might consider glucosamine and chondroitin to help to rebuild the joints. The collagen can help to rebuild the joints, so can glucosamine. Glucosamine has been studied a lot to help, as something you can take to help rebuild joints. So those are things I would recommend as well. And then, you know, because there's an inflammatory piece, and because of the stress of having the Ehlers-Danlos, you want to recommend stress reduction. So your good old meditation, your box breathing, your 4-2-6 breathing, your 4-4-8 breathing, things like yoga nidra, which is a progressive relaxation. I don't know about yin yoga. That depends on the mobility of the person and if the yin yoga is going to bother them, because yin yoga is for stretching connective tissue and relaxing connective tissue. That may not be the best thing for, it depends on the person, but it might not be the best thing for someone with Ehlers-Danlos. But restorative yoga can be very nice, because the restorative yoga, you're using props. So you're basically relaxing on the props. The whole thing with restorative yoga is, if there's any space between you and the floor, you fill it with a prop. And so there are great props that you can use. And restorative yoga can be done at the yoga studio. It can also be done in your home. And you can use things that are around the house, like here's a cushion. This is a nice couch cushion that you can use. I'm sitting against a larger couch because this was a futon cushion. And so I'm sitting against one of those, and you can use that. That works great as a bolster. You can also purchase any kind of yoga equipment online. So you can buy bolsters. I have 3 densities of couch cushions that I bought to do yoga at, and I bought it at a local store that sells a lot of random stuff. And I have 3 cushions. So I have one that's kind of thin, and I like to use that one the best to support my head if I'm lying down. And I also use it to sit on if I'm doing a meditation. I like to sit on that cushion, the least deep one. And then I have a thick cushion, the thickest, biggest one. That gets propped under my right knee. My right knee has more osteoarthritis in it than the left knee. So if I'm doing butterfly pose, I will prop it under, it goes under there. And also when I'm doing my leg lift crunches, I put the bigger cushion between my knees to lift up and down. And you can do that for bridge pose as well. And then I have the medium cushion, my favorite thing to use for that. It goes under the left knee, which doesn't need as much support as the right. And I also, when I'm doing spinal twists, my legs rest on that cushion. Also, if I'm doing a short practice and YouTube, if I'm doing a short practice and there are breaks where you're just lying on your back, I like to have my knees propped. So I'll use the 2 cushions under my knees instead of using the full bolster. If the only thing I need the bolster for is, if I'm not, you don't need the bolster for that practice, but I am using the cushions, I'll lie down and put those cushions under my legs. And those are just couch cushions you may already have in your house. You can also buy blocks. Blocks are inexpensive. They're easy to find, and blocks can be so useful. You can prop up you can make your bolster higher, Like so one of the more difficult poses in yoga is saddle pose, because it's just too much pressure on my knees. But I can do saddle if I'm propped. So I have to put, I have to take my bolster and prop it up on a slant, on an incline with two blocks. And then I lie back and I put cushions, couch cushions under the, all three couch cushions. So I have the big one under my mid back and the smaller and the medium one under my lower back. And then I have the lightest one under my head. And then I can do, I'm lifted up enough so it's not so much pressure on my knees. So they can be really useful. And so restorative yoga, or any yoga that, relaxing yoga you do with props, can be helpful for Ehlers-Danlos, because it involves deep breathing and it involves a gentle amount of stretching. So stress reduction is also going to be really important. Protecting your skin. If you want to use lotion, then you want to use a nice lotion that doesn't have any unnatural ingredients in it, that has good quality oils like shea butter or cocoa butter. Maybe it has some vitamin C in it to help you build collagen in your skin. It might have hyaluronic acid to hold moisture. So there's some really nice natural lotions that you can get. Aloe is always great. Aloe is great for encouraging the growth of healthy skin cells. So is retinol for your face. Retinol is a precursor to vitamin A, and vitamin A is also good for healthy cell differentiation. So those are all things I would do. Again, with a diagnosis of Ehlers-Danlos, everybody is different. So the person comes in, we think you have Ehlers-Danlos, we ask you if you've been diagnosed, we're probably going to send you to the rheumatologist to get diagnosed for sure, and meanwhile, we're going to treat what we see, you know, and treat the person as the person, which is what you do anyway. You don't treat the disease, you treat the human, and the human has whatever's going on with that human, so you help them however they are, right? So that's Ehlers-Danlos. I thought that would be interesting. It came across my desk. I thought I'd look it up. It's not an autoimmune disease. Some individuals with Ehlers-Danlos may develop autoimmune conditions like lupus or rheumatoid arthritis, because Ehlers-Danlos weakens the connective tissue. So if you have autoimmune yuck, if you have inflammation running around, you're more susceptible to autoimmune conditions if you have Ehlers-Danlos. The other thing I'm going to assume you're more susceptible to is damage from tick-borne illnesses. So somebody comes in with hypermobility and possible Ehlers-Danlos, they're going to get checked for tick-borne illnesses, because the tick-borne illnesses, they're going to go, yum, yum, this is very exposed collagen, let's eat. So you're definitely going to treat for, you're going to look for tick-borne illnesses and treat that if you see it. All right. Now, have you ever had plantar fasciitis?
Yep.
Oh, so tell me about that.
It hurts.
When did you have it and how did it happen?
It is a very, very, very common running injury.
Oh, yeah.
And I was running a lot at the time. Mm-hmm. And I didn't get it real bad. I think I got onto it very quickly, so yeah. I was able to avoid the really difficult parts of it, because it can be really tough. Mm-hmm. But I was running a lot. I was probably running about 40 miles a week.
Oy vey!
So I was running a lot.
We don't do that anymore.
No, I don't do that anymore. But it gets your bottom of your foot just gets really stiff, because it's like the muscle that runs along the bottom of your foot.
It's not the muscle, it's the fascia.
It's the fascia, yes. Right. And it just gets really tight and stiff, and it's very painful. It's hard to walk on even.
Terrible.
But if you, you spend a lot of time stretching your Achilles and stretching, that's the key to getting it better. And also, not using it as much. But of course, it's your feet, you use them every day.
Yeah.
So it's a little difficult. But what I was doing for it was I was standing with my toes on the edge of the stairs and letting my heels drop.
To get the Achilles.
Yeah, get the Achilles. Mm-hmm. and just breathe and just hold the pose for as long as you can, and then do it again and again and again, and hopefully that will work your way out of it. But the Achilles seems to be directly connected to it.
Literally.
Yeah.
It is.
Literally.
Yes. It is connected to it.
So it's you know, it's really key that you keep your Achilles as stretched
supple.
As possible and supple as possible.
Right.
But when you run a lot, it gets tighter. You know, it just happens.
So the plantar fascia, what fascia is, first of all, it is fat, fluid, and connective tissue that surrounds all of your muscles. So the plantar surface, plantar refers to the sole of your foot. So plantar fasciitis means you have an inflammation of the fascia in the sole of your foot. And it's not technically inflammation. So it's not really fasciitis, it's fasciosis.
Okay.
So fasciosis just means that there's a dysfunction of the fascia. And so, but it's called plantar fasciitis because it hurts, and you can treat it with anti-inflammatories, and there's probably some inflammation too. But anyway, the reason it happens is because you're slamming on that foot constantly.
Yep.
And what happens is, so people who run, people who stand for work, so if you're a hairstylist or a server in a restaurant, or you're on your feet, it's not so much if you're a cyclist, because you're not putting pressure on the foot like you are when you're running. But when you are running, you're slamming your feet down, and you're going to be more likely to get plantar fasciitis if you run on pavement than if you run in the woods.
Right.
Duh. Because
which I was doing at that time.
You're running on the pavement. Sure.
More so.
40 miles a week. Woo. Yeah. So anyway, what's going on is you're going slam, 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 and your body is trying to protect you. So it will increase the amount of connective tissue that is there. So when you increase that connective tissue, guess what? The circulation gets choked out.
Yeah.
And so you have this vicious cycle of slam, slam, slam. You're building more scar tissue. You're building more connective tissue. And the circulation can't get in there to repair you. And it's keeping happening over and over. So you have to, like, get off your feet to get it
to
calm
get
down.
Off your feet.
That's right.
Right.
And so... what you want, so the thing is, to treat the plantar fasciitis, osis, whatever, you can do ice, because one of the things people do is they would get, you know, frozen water bottles and run their feet along it. So if the ice helps, you can do that. But you also want to get the circulation back down there. So when you have plantar fasciitis or fasciosis, you don't just ice it and stretch. You want to do things to get the circulation back in there. So one of the best things to do, and it can be hard because, you know, you might not be able to tolerate it, but you want to get somebody in there and do some really good massage. So I know, and you are, the thing is, you're a tenderfoot and you don't like that.
Yeah, but that just pushing on the bottom of your feet,
it hurts.
Is inherently hard.
So if that's difficult, then you have to have somebody who has a really gentle touch. And also, if you can't tolerate directly having massage on the bottom of the foot, you get massage on the heel and the Achilles and the entire leg, because that's going to encourage circulation to get back down into that foot. And then, you know, doing those stretches where you are, you know, doing some icing of the foot, but also alternating hot and cold might be a good idea, because then you're going to flush the circulation through the area. Foot baths might be good too. So if you're doing a foot bath that had some Epsom salts in it, that can be helpful too. And then exercises that are off your feet where you're increasing circulation. So you sit down and you cross your leg and put your foot on your knee, and then you push forward on the heel and back on the toes, and you're going to get a good stretch that way. And just, you know, classic twirling your foot, you know, ankle rotation exercises, and pointing, flexing your foot is going to happen too. The other thing that's nice is doing simple exercises like legs up the wall, where you scoot your tuchus against the wall and you put your legs up the wall. So you're going to get circulation to come down out of your feet, because you have excessive circulation in your feet. So waterfall pose in yoga is very nice, where you can do waterfall pose up against the wall, where you scooch against the wall and you just put your legs up on the wall so that your legs are vertical. You can also put a pillow. You don't have to use a pillow, but you can put a pillow or a block or a bolster under your sacrum, and just put your legs in the air. I love to do that because anytime you have your legs above your heart, it's a very relaxing pose. Thank you very much. So here is that's another thing you can use. This Ron just handed me
a ball,
but this ball is very mushy.
That one's mushy, but I had one that had these little spikes on it.
Yes, right. So if you get AccuBalls, I recommend people to get the AccuBalls. So the AccuBalls have their little, you know, rubber balls that have little spikes on them, and they're called AccuBalls because they're hitting the acupressure points on the bottom of your feet. So you can roll your foot on those, and that's a great way to sort of break up the fascia and get circulation back in there. That's the big thing. You want to encourage circulation to get back into that foot. The whole reason it's happening is because you've thickened the fascia because you're slamming. Oh, here's an AccuBall. So if you're watching YouTube or my Facebook Live, this is an AccuBall, and you can see it has little spikies all over it, and you can rub your feet on, and these come in, this is the smallest one that you can get, and this is very nice for rubbing your feet on. This comes in a bigger one. All the bigger ones, pretty much, if it's the AccuBall brand, they have water inside, so you can throw them in the microwave and heat them up. Can also throw them in the freezer and chill them. You could probably chill this too, although there's no water in this one. But the bigger ones have water in them, and there's, you can get balls. You can get a bigger ball that has a line through it, so you can roll your spine. And then you can also get a bar that has the spikes on it as well. And all the bar, if the bar has metal in it, you can't put it in the microwave, but you can put it in the freezer. Anyway, so these can be really hot. I really like these. I recommend these to people with plantar fasciitis or fasciosis because it is better for helping to break down that that fascia. And then, of course, you're going to eat really good. You're going to eat your bioflavonoids, and you know, you eat your fruits and vegetables, especially your berries, to help to increase circulation. And remember, you're not just improving circulation in your feet; it's the whole lower extremity. So improving circulation, getting massage for your entire leg, your pelvis, your groin, your ankles, your legs all the way down, and your actual feet as well can be helpful. If you have trouble tolerating the massage, then acupuncture can be very helpful as well. So the other thing to be aware of is that Bartonella infection can cause pain in the soles of the feet, particularly upon waking and walking, and it's described as a soreness or sensitivity that can be associated with trauma to blood vessels in the feet. Bartonella infection can also cause other symptoms like fatigue, muscle pain, and neurological issues. So one of the things I might choose to do is if somebody comes in with plantar fasciitis, I'm going to screen them for Bartonella. So Bartonella can be gotten from ticks. It can be gotten from cats. Cat scratch disease, Bartonella henselae. And I had it, you know, I had antibodies to it. And so I had to treat for it. And I think that's what gave me my shakes. I don't have the shakes anymore. I'm so thrilled. I do not have the shakes anymore. And in October, I'm going to get tested to see if I still have Lyme antibodies, because I haven't been taking Lyme herbs. All right. So Ron says I have to stop now because time's up. And I'm going to leave this, I had some more on plantar fasciitis that I might talk about next week, but it's time to go. So you have been listening to Radio Naturopath, the talk show about health and natural medicine. I am Fran Storch, ND, naturopathic physician, with my co-host, Ron Meniza. You can email me with questions and comments at radionaturopath@gmail.com. If you'd like to listen to the show at another time, you can check out our podcast at whus.org, iTunes, Spotify, Patreon, Buzzsprout, and YouTube. You may also watch the recorded Facebook Live episodes at Fran Storch, ND. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. The information presented on the show should not be construed as medical advice or direction. If you're having a medical condition, please consult with your physician. Thank you for listening to Radio Naturopath, your show where you can learn about the best of science and nature. We'll be back with more Radio Naturopath next week at 91.7 FM. WHUS stores and WHUS.org.